I'm going to call the Natural Resource Subcommittee of the Joint Ways and Means Committee to order. We've been delaying here waiting for our staff to come, but I think we've waited 10 minutes. We probably ought to start. Mr. Carrier, would you like to start with your presentation?
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. For the record, my name is Mike Carrier, Director of Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. And before I get into my remarks, I'd like to recognize someone very important to the department. We are a commission-led agency. We have seven commissioners that are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate who provide policy oversight and direction to the department. And most importantly, they hire me. And there she is.
Sorry.
One of those seven commissioners is with us today. Mr. George Bell of Salem is with us. And pleased that George can be here. Do you want me to continue or do you want to go back up?
Why don't we stop, Mike, if you don't mind, and have Susie present the budget. And, sir, I want to thank you for the work you do for the benefit of the state of Oregon. That's right. It's a good group. I agree.
Thank you. Well, I apologize for being late. I was out on this great walk. Am I all red? Okay. Senator Messerly asked me to give the committee a quick briefing on what the schedule is for July 15th. And that's what I passed out to you. You also got a copy of this when I sent up the advanced copy of the LFO analysis. But for today, we're going to do the agency overview, beginning with LFO, giving an overview, and the Department of Administrative Services. And then the department director will do an overview for the department. And then we'll begin review of the program areas. Catching my breath. One thing I added to this memo that wasn't there before is in bold. I kind of talked a little bit about the co-chair's instructions to subcommittee, but the bold is and some additional instruction regarding reclassifications. Consider delaying computer upgrades one biennium and most IT investments and eliminate all conferences and travel. And then for the Parks Department, the Senate co-chair has requested the subcommittee consider increasing land acquisition and local grants, as well as exploring federal matching grants with the department. Those are suggestions. They're not edicts, but they're things for you to consider exploring with the department as we move ahead.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Senator Morgan.
Do you have any insight into the Senate co-chairs requesting the increase in land acquisition and local grants? Why was that put in there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I don't. I was given a list of things for the subcommittee to consider in natural resources, and that was on that list. So I don't know.
And Susie, while you're catching your breath a little more, let me state where this came from, committee members, this morning in education. At least I didn't know, maybe the rest of the committee did, but did not realize that we were going to have 4 days of hearing as we are in this budget, and myself and others on the committee included were asking very in-depth technical questions, only to find out later that we were going to be dealing more in-depth as we went through the week. And so this is why I asked staff to show us how we're going to break out these discussions, and maybe we can help us get through the presentations today, and then we'll deal with some of the technical stuff later on. So, okay, Susie, did you want to?
Okay. Now, beginning with an overview of the agency's budget, I've handed out to you a handout.
Yeah.
And it's a guessing game now. What the pictures are. They're right off of the Parks Department website.
So they'll change every day?
On the website, maybe. But not in this committee. The governor's recommended budget total funds is $142,660,636. And of that, $51,537,233 is lottery fund. And the department has almost 531 FTE. And the next.
Excuse me, that lottery fund, that is all about Measure 66?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
On page 2, the pie chart at the top is a pictorial of the department's total budget by fund. They have 81.9 million other funds, which is makes up about 58% of their budget. Federal funds is about 6% at 9.1, and then the lottery funds, 51.5 million, is 36% of their budget.
Mr. Chair,
yes. Representative Morgan,
Can you talk to us about what comprises the other funds?
Yes, included in the other funds are park user fees from camping, day use. There's donations, grants. I think you receive federal as other, mostly fees, though.
If I might, Mr. Chair, the vast majority of that 81.9 million is fees that people pay to camp.
Yes, I can just double check real quick with the total revenues there. Park user fees is about 32.5 million of that other fund.
Oh.
We have other non-business licenses and fees or other charges for service. Included in this other funds is 1.2 million for certificates of participation for their IT project.
Where are you in this thing?
Yeah, I'm on in the revenue section on page budget page R5. And then underneath the, on that table there are transfers in. All those transfers in are another portion of their revenues is the RV registration fees. That's $33.9 million. Salmon revenue.
What's that, if I might, Mr. Chair, that $57.9
million?
Other, the... Is the intra-fund other? Yeah.
That's just a way for the agency to account for charges within the agency for administrative type. Is that how you're doing that? They charge back to... It comes back out in a transfer out.
Mr. Chair, if I might, Lisa Pearson with the Department of Administrative Services. You'll see interfund transfers when there's an expenditure in one program that perhaps is actually, in terms of a line expenditure to the public, in another program area. So they might use a revenue account to move that funding over to another program. For example, if I could use a DEQ example. There might be some resource that goes from the water quality program to their cross-cutting program called Cross Media, and they might, for example, use an interfund transfer for that purpose. There are also interfund transfers to move program funding that supports administration, accounting, budgeting work, personnel, human resources kinds of work. Moving that money to support the actual expenditure over in that other unit.
Okay. So it's an internal shifting rather than actual revenue coming in.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, yes. It's actually supposed to balance between the interfund transfers in and out.
And
a major point.
In this case, Mr. Chair, the bulk of that interfund transfer is in the operations area, transfers in to operations.
Okay, so if I might just reiterate to make sure I'm getting this, what is functionally happening here is money's being transferred from revenue-generating pieces of the department's activities into operations.
Right, in other areas of the budget, too, but the bulk of it is going into operations, which is camping, day use, park, running the parks.
Okay.
Okay. And back to my charts. On page 2, the bottom, the bar graph chart here shows, it's just an exhibit to show you that the other fund support for the Parks Department has increased 51% since 1993, which was the lowest point in the last 10 years. So they have been slowly increasing their revenue from camping usage, not fee increases. And lottery funds has increased by 20% since 1999, which is when Measure 66 went into effect.
Susie, it looks like there was a little bit of lottery funds prior to 66.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the legislature allowed $15 million in lottery bonds to be sold, and that amount that you see there is the debt service on those lottery bonds back in 1997. And also, I'm not sure which year before that, there was another period of time where lottery bonds were sold to assist the department in their operations, and we were paying debt service on that as well. So you can see that in 97-99, it's almost doubled, I think. That little teeny slice that you see there. But after that point, when Measure 66 went into effect, the lottery money now that the department gets also pays the debt service on those bonds. On page 3, at the top of the page, is another bar chart just showing how general fund support was replaced by the lottery funds in 1999, and that lottery funds have increased by 11% each biennium, so they have been getting additional money from the from the beginning of Measure 66. And finally, this last chart, I think I'm going to skip that one and go through some of the other handouts, because I have another one that kind of just reiterates the policy issues where I talk about the issues that were discussed during the interim as well. The next handout that you have is then the LFO analysis, and hopefully you've had a chance to read that. The next handout behind that then is a summary of the policy packages in the department's budget that they'll discuss when they go through it by program. Reductions and other and federal fund increases in their policy package as well. The second page of that then is the description of the 10% reductions that the agency included with their budget, as all agencies are required to do, and what the impact of reducing those areas would be.
Susie, could you talk to us about the federal funds? 97-99, it looks like there were very little, if any, federal funds, up to a substantial amount now. Are those stable funds, or are they contingent upon match? Or
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the I'll answer your last question first. They are contingent on match. It's usually a local match. These are the land and water, primarily the land and water conservation fund monies that are flowing into the department on a these are formula-driven monies from the federal government, and there was a large increase in the last two biennium, and I believe that the department expects those to remain the same, at least through this biennium. There's never any sure guarantee that that's going to stay that way, but for right now, that's the direction that it's going. Mike might be able to answer that a little bit better when we get to the department overview, but for now, that's dedicated to the parks. Not with a war, anything could happen. Let's see. The last thing that I had for you there's a summary of the budget notes that the department had during the interim, and they have a. There you go. This is two column one.
And the status of each of those budget notes is in the second column. There is an also, the department has a handout in their program overview, and they'll talk about the, they can talk about the results of each of those budget notes. So I thought you would like to have those. And
Mike, would you like to try again? Try to start again?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I do have one more thing. There was another handout that you had that I said I was going to talk about later. And that's this one here, which is the issues and challenges in this budget.
Okay.
I don't have my copy, so I'll look after
it. Go ahead.
Yours. There are about seven issues, key issues that I wanted to go over with you. One is the renovation and facility repair needs continue to be a major focus for preserving the vitality of the Oregon State Park System, that is replacing and repairing the buildings and infrastructure in the parks that have gotten to a point of disrepair and have reached beyond their useful life. The cost of doing business outpacing the growth of lottery and fee revenues, as inflation continues to increase, the growth that the agency is experiencing is not necessarily keeping up in all areas. Technology requirements for financial management and geographic information systems, the point of sale system during for this next biennium, 2003-05, this is all part of the planned, and I'm going to call it infrastructure, that the agency had set out to do at the beginning of receiving this Measure 66 money in order to keep control on their cash receipts and do a better job of managing their financial systems. And so it's pretty important that they continue to this upgrade that they are working on. They'll be continuing their work to develop a state park in Washington County. This next biennium, they expect to be relocating to the New North Mall building, so they'll have some expenses related to moving. Pretty much just moving, actually. I think they said their rent was going to go. Why are you smiling?
No, I'm...
Okay. Was that taken out of the budget and I didn't know it? Population growth increases in demand on current resources and facilities need to create new parks and recreational programs. There's one other thing that I would want to alert the subcommittee to. This is given the budget constrictions that we have in the general fund, it's a time for the subcommittee to also look at agencies with other funds. And in this case, lottery funds are not necessarily an ongoing forever source of revenue here, and it might be a better strategy to discuss with the department ways of becoming less dependent on the lottery monies where we have staff being funded by those lottery monies and slowly start moving them towards the other funded areas and using those lottery funds for more discrete kinds of investments that aren't going to require maintaining it into the future. I know that the agency has two packages that increase FTE. One is in a GIS system and the other is in interpretive services, and they've asked to use lottery money to fund those positions. We might want to have a dialogue with the department and a better way of doing that so that it's sustainable into the future or less makes the public less dependent on those kinds of resources. The following parts of this handout here are the emergency board actions that were taken during the interim and the results of those for your information, the kinds of things that we discussed during the interim, the budget notes that were reviewed and accepted by the emergency board, and some fund shifting that went on as a result of their reorganization.
Any questions, Susie? Hey, Mike.
Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I would like to invite Lisa Pearson, the budget management analyst, to go ahead and provide her overview now. Is that acceptable?
Sure. Let's make sure we all get the right information. So. What's your sense, please? Inside of something?
Wait, sure. Miss Jordan.
Oh.
I'm still on my block, you know.
Okay. Go ahead, Lisa.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, my name is Lisa Pearson with the Department of Administrative Services. And I will be presenting a very brief overview of the governor's balanced budget as of December 2002. And as you know, it is no longer balanced. But starting on page 2 of the handout that you just received, there is a standard chart that we produce showing the historical expenditure information for each agency. And this budget has a 5.9% increase in total funds expenditure. That is made up of a 10% increase in lottery funds. It primarily, not only did their revenue forecast increase slightly, but also there were some remaining funds from previous biennia that were brought into the budget in this request to expend. There's a 3.3% increase of other funds. And that would result from greater sales of park permits or fees to access the parks. And there's a 3.9% increase in federal funds, which we went over briefly with the land and water conservation funds primarily. And there's a 4.2% increase in full-time equivalents in the requested budget. Some of this has to do with limited duration positions and also some requests for enhancements that I will get into later on in my presentation. We move to page 3. This is a pie chart that shows the source of the fund types. We just went over this. Again, other funds, primarily fees from campers and other day use fees. And some contracts with ODOT, some operating revenues or from license revenues from ATV operations, and then also some rather small and dedicated kinds of revenues, such as Deschutes River boater passes, sales of publications, that sort of thing. The federal funds includes Historic Preservation Act, the Recreational Trails Program, and the Land and Water Conservation Fund that we just discussed. And non-limited funds come from donations, lease rental receipts, sales of surplus, land, camp firewood sales, paddle boats, horseback rides, and concerts. We turn to page 4. This slide very briefly summarizes how we got to the governor's balanced budget. Again, it was a 5.9% increase from the fifth special session. There were no major actions taken in special sessions, such as you've seen in terms of reductions from other state agencies that have been before you. And that's because this agency does not have any general fund, and its lottery funds are dedicated through Measure 66 to its purposes. Major programs and services included in the governor's budget, we continue services, but we also request enhanced historic preservation, phase one of the Washington County Park development, some all-terrain vehicle grant increases, and the completion of the financial management system, which Ms. Jordan mentioned when she was talking about the point-of-sale system. Turning to page 5, this slide shows graphically the breakdown between program areas. Operations is by far the largest program area. That's followed by administration, and what you'll see from the agency will show administration is lower than that figure. I want to explain why. When we present information, go by the breakdown that's in the budget system, in the computer, and that is what this represents. The agency has gone a step farther and has broken that down into things that are traditional administrative kinds of activities, budgeting, accounting, human resources, and then activities that really support the program in a different way that maybe aren't considered traditional administrative responsibilities. And so that's where the difference comes between our presentation and the agency's presentation. As you can see, facilities investment would then be the next greatest program category, followed by heritage conservation, property acquisition, non-limited, and grants. Turning to page 6, this pie chart shows the breakdown of expenditure types for this agency. And as you can see, services and supplies is the largest category of expenditures. This is a little bit unusual compared to some of the other agencies you'll be seeing. And this is because this agency, more so than most other natural resource agencies, has property that it needs to maintain. And it has more need for contracts for maintenance services, facilities improvement, than other agencies. Following that is personal services, and the agency not only has full-time positions, but has a large pool of seasonals, which is another sort of unique thing about natural resource agencies in general. And that is followed by special payments, which would be grants out to local parks grants, for example, all-terrain vehicle grants, et cetera. Turning to page 7, this slide shows the process that was used to get to the December 2002 balanced budget. We started with the legislatively adopted budget coming out of the 2001 session, and there were some legislatively approved actions through April 2002, which, is, as you recognize, is nearly a year ago now. There was a rebalance between programs to better reflect how the agency actually operates. And there was an increase in local grants for parks. The base budget adjustments include roll-up of 2001-03 position actions and merit increases, compensation plan changes that occurred during the current biennium and will continue into the next biennium, and they will be there for a full 24 months as opposed to, in some cases, 18 months, 6 months, that sort of thing. I need to point out here that when we did do this budget in December, we did not have the opportunity to pull out the merit increases that would be normally available to employees in the 2003-05 biennium, but that is certainly something that is going to be done, and it will be handled during work session. So the amount attributable to that particular factor will decrease as you work through this budget. Essential packages include the traditional non-position information control system, which includes things such as temporaries, overtime, differentials, mass transit, unemployment assessments. And then there were a number of phase-outs in the 020 package, mainly revolving around IT projects. So, for example, the switch over to using the statewide financial management system, there was a one-time project cost with that that goes away. It's no longer necessary. But there's also a phase-out of the amount that was paid to ODOT in order to use their system, which was the way things had been operating for a number of years. Other IT projects include an email upgrade, reservations server upgrade for Reservations Northwest, some one-time computer equipment costs that were funded through the Heritage federal funds, a grant change, and it actually caused an increase in expenditure limitation for truing up the grant cycle for local grants. Previously, the grant cycle had actually overlapped into the next biennium, and there was a decision made to try and get out all the grant funding and make those grant decisions at the very beginning of the biennium so that grant recipients would be able to expend that money and finish up by the end of the current biennium rather than having to constantly carry forward an amount for a project that had actually been let previously. And then there was also inflation included. And again, this is one of those areas where in the major general fund policy areas, there were reductions taken to inflation in the December balancing. And that was not done in natural resources because of the number of natural resource agencies and also because it was just far too late in the process. But that is something that is moving forward through the legislative session. Moving to page 8, we start with the policy packages. And there were 070 revenue shortfall packages in this agency. The biggest one that came from an action that the agency couldn't really control would be the Washington State pulling out of the reservations Northwest and deciding to have its own process. So there was a reduction of other funds for that. There was also a reduction in lottery funds in the facilities program in order to maintain what has become the traditional allocation between facilities, operations, acquisitions, and grants. And you may remember that starting around 1999, $15 million had been provided for facilities, about $4 million for acquisitions, if I remember correctly, and a certain amount for $5 million for grants. This budget preserves that, and in order to keep facilities at that $15 million level, there was reduction taken in this package. In the 080 package, that would be the June Emergency Board. That was included, and that would be the all-terrain vehicle program grant increase. This agency did not participate in the special sessions because of the funding stream that I mentioned before, but all managers and executive positions above salary range 38 were held so that they did not actually get a salary range 38 and above salary increase. So that affected this agency as well. And then we start into the true policy packages. And the first one, package 101, is the financial management system development phase 2. This would be the point of sale completion and the management database, which will provide the agency with better reporting so it can manage its budgets and its production of services better. It's proposed that this be funded with certificates of participation, which would be repaid over time, approximately 6 years, with lottery funds. And on average, it's estimated that the debt service would be about $212,000 per biennium to do that. Package 102 is a equipment replacement plan for equipment that is really pretty unique to this agency, things that DAS does not have on hand. It would be tractor lawnmowers, other kinds of groundskeeping equipment, and that would be funded with lottery funds as well. Package 103 is the first phase of the Washington County Park development, and the agency will be able to explain further in its presentation about the different stages for that proposal. Package 104 is on page 9, and it would continue 3 limited duration positions for the State Historic Preservation Office. They would help with National Register workload and maintaining databases. Again, on page 9, package 105 increases funding for Preserving Oregon Construction grants. It would basically double the size of the program, providing more grant opportunities to homeowners, landowners, property owners to be able to do some work on their properties in order to maintain them and keep them for future generations. Package 106, Cemetery Commission enhancements, again, is lottery funded. And it would provide funding for grants, traveling exhibits, signage, and publications for this particular area of interest. Package 107 invests in equipment and staff for the geographic information systems, which supports planning, research, and management. And again, that would be lottery funds. Package 108 is the Salem office relocation to the North Mall building. The rate per square foot goes down, but there's actually more square footage in order to meet the needs of the department. This has been a longstanding issue, and so this would accomplish all of that planning over the years. Package 109 is an investment in interpretive services. And there's actually a term that's preferred, but essentially this would allow for some positions to be specifically dedicated to interpreting such things as the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial Celebration or, commemoration, and also such things as the Oregon Plan, coastal, natural heritage kind of work, and the environment. Moving on to page 10, package 110 turned out to be a technical adjustment in order to have the agency continue its relationship with the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, and that would provide the funding for them to go ahead and contract with the Corps for the kind of work that the Corps does in the parks, assisting with maintenance and also with small projects. Packages 111 and 112 are there for a similar reason. 111 would convert temporary staff to seasonal positions, and package 112 would convert temporary staff to seasonal positions in the field. The other would be in the Reservations Northwest. And this is following DAS policy on the use of temps. There's a long history here going back to around 1990 where some agencies were using temporaries for such an extended period of time and continuously that this was taken to the Employment Relations Board, and it was ruled that that was not appropriate. So around the mid-1990s, the state began to actually implement policies and statute to ensure that, for example, there was one case where somebody had been working for 5 years continuously as a temp rather than actually creating a position for that person. So this would help clean up some of the Parks Department issues with temporary positions and bring them in conformance with statute and with DAS policy.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Lisa, can you explain to the committee a little bit about what that policy is? You know, what is the line between a temporary and converting a temporary to a permanent position? How many months do they work? Is it continuous? Is it there is some criteria that
Mr. Chair and Ms. Jordan, yes, and the short answer is the director just whispered to me would be non-recurring workload. I do have a copy of the statutes, which I would be happy to give you. I don't know if you really want to go into all of the particulars, but basically exceeding 6 months is the benchmark, and it is at ORS 240.309. And there are some other criteria in there as well, but I don't know that we would necessarily want to walk through that right now. Package 113 continues the theme of all-terrain vehicle grant enhancements or increases in order to acquire more land for this activity. Package 114 provides $300,000 of lottery fund for Lewis and Clark Bicentennial Commemoration grants. And package 116 would fund extraordinary utility cost increases, and it would be lottery funded. And again, because this agency has a lot of real property and operates a lot of facilities, they have been particularly hit by utility costs over the past 2 to 3 years. They unfortunately don't look like they're going to be getting any better anytime soon. So that brings us to the end of the policy packages. Fee and revenue changes, none to speak of, and there weren't any new programs, just enhancements to existing ones, and also there weren't really any governor's investments. This was not a budget that actually got to invest in anything. So that concludes my presentation. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer them.
Questions or comments, Representative Krieger?
Maybe the mic. Acquisitions, two pending in Curry County, Garrison Lake, and then one there by Frankport. What's the status of those?
Madam Chair, Representative Krieger, Yes, we have two pending acquisitions. One of Frankfort is one that's commonly referred to as Frankfort Beach or Sisters Rock. And we took a partial interest in that, so we are a part owner in that, with the intent of buying out the remaining interest in the property in the next biennium if funds for acquisition are available. What that purchase of partial interest allowed us to do is to provide for public access on the property and to relieve the current owners of any associated liability. The property at Port Orford or Garrison Lake, we have an option on that and have an agreement with the seller that he will do a, I never remember the title of the tax code, I want to call it a 1013, but it's not important. It's a special tax exchange where if he finds a like property, he can avoid certain tax consequences if he acquires the substitute property. So he's still looking for a property for that purpose, and we've extended our option with him until May for him to do that. But we still expect sometime this spring to close with him on the Port Orford property.
Any more questions, Lisa? Lisa, I have a couple. Of the ballot measure 66 funds, are they fungible to anything else?
Mr. Chair, we've certainly considered that over the past trying time of the past year and a half. At this point, we have not come to any thing that would release us from keeping this dedicated. But it has been, you know, something that has been batted around.
And I guess, excuse me, go ahead. Did you?
Mr. Chair, I think to the degree that it meets the test of the Constitution that the funds be applied to those criteria in historic parks, acquisitions, local grants that are park-related, I'd have to get the statute out to read the criteria for applying those funds. If other agencies are involved in any of those activities, there is some ability to stretch that over. But we would have to carefully work with our legislative council to do that.
Understand that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just clarification. Does the money, the Measure 66 money on the park side have the 65-35 split that the money has on the beach side?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, no. There's no split at all.
Second question, Lisa. The new building on the mall, the department's going to, maybe Mike, you could answer this better. I'm hearing rumors that the building might be newer and cheaper, but the parking is a disadvantage. Is it going to be more expensive with parking in the new building?
Mr. Chair, there will certainly be much less parking available there than what our staff has been accustomed to, because we're in a rented facility north of town with adequate parking. And we're working with DAS to educate our staff about public transportation and transportation alternatives, because there is not expected to be adequate parking for all the staff that will be housed in that building, which includes three agencies moving on to the site. But let me expand on that, because part of your question was about expense. I anticipate no additional expense to the department as a result of that issue.
Will the parking be adequate to have, like, your commission meetings in your new building, or will you have to go off-site?
Mr. Chair, we anticipate a number of spaces being available to the department to reserve for situations like that. What I suspect in the case of special meetings like a commission meeting, that we would give them a tag for a special meter, or displace staff that have assigned parking spots for those days of those meetings and ask them to voluntarily give up that spot so the commissioners would have somewhere to park. Our biggest concern is, and we'll just have to work through this, is we have an office which has a pretty high volume of public traffic, park visitors who want to stop to buy an annual pass or pick up some brochures or figure out where state parks are, and we're still trying to figure out just how they will be accommodated, especially given a number of them come in and pickups that are equipped for fifth wheels or even in their motorhomes. We're very concerned about their ability to find parking near that facility.
There's ways to park. It might not be illegal, though, right? Any other questions? Thank you, Lisa. Mike, I think we're ready, but you better tell us where we're going to be out here in our books, because I'm totally confused.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I have just a couple of minutes of introductory remarks, and then what I would like to do is to walk you through the presentation book that we've provided for you, how it's organized, and then also explain to you how I hope to present our budget over the next 3 days. The department has been entrusted with stable and adequate funding for a 15-year period through the benefits of Measure 66, but just as importantly, through your support in the appropriation process beginning in 1999. And that really has enabled the department to enjoy a period of financial security, but more importantly, a period of certainty in which we can really focus on what our long-term goals are, on improving day-to-day operations to provide excellent customer service, but within a structure that's stable. And working in this business for 28 years now, park agencies are typically underfunded. And what tends to result is this kind of random movement from year to year trying to figure out what's going to get the legislature's attention. And so some new gimmick or some new campaign or some new theme or some new hardship to try and get your attention and compete for those scarce dollars. What Measure 66 and your support has provided is a period of stability where we don't have to do that. We focus on what our goals and objectives are. We have a target date of 2014 when this ballot measure expires for the first time, and we have goals that we've established around that. Well, to honor that trust, the Parks and Recreation Commission has adopted 8 major goals that I've talked to you about a number of times before called Target 2014, and those are supported with key strategies, and most importantly, they're supported with performance measures that we're going to be talking about this week, and I'm sure you'll have a lot of questions about them. And we regularly evaluate those performance measures and how we're doing to ensure that we are meeting our goals and objectives. Now, the budget that I'm going to present to you this week addresses those goals as well as the performance measures. And in our presentations, we're going to strive to fully inform you about our ongoing operations and about our programs. The enhancement packages, and I know you have some concern about enhancing any agency these days, are intended to be tied to our long-range goals, and we'll strive to help you see those connections. Now, an important question that routinely comes up from the legislature, not just within this forum, but certainly in all the other committees that I talk to, is the long-term financial sustainability of the agency, because this is a short-term benefit, the Measure 66 money. And although it goes on the ballot automatically in 2014, there still is some uncertainty. It could be countermanded at any time in the intervening period, or it could be voted down in 2014. It is tied to natural resource and salmon restoration, which will probably be just as controversial then as they are now. So I take seriously that question, and I take seriously the recommendation that Susie had that we need to look at over the long term the idea of moving off of dependence on Measure 66 or lottery dollars that were provided by this constitutional amendment as something that sustains day-to-day operations and reserve it for special efforts like facility reinvestment or new development construction or even land acquisition. But in preparing this budget, we've looked at that issue, and we've not only looked at the expected revenues and expenditures for the coming biennium, but we've looked at a 10-year revenue and spending plan that I asked staff to prepare last year. And that 10-year plan will help us identify when we need to start pushing in advance in a proactive way other revenue streams like camping fees or day use fees or federal funds or other sources or private donations even, so as to remain sustainable and remain independent of the general fund and not be overly reliant on one source of funds like the lottery. I would be remiss if I didn't mention the importance of Oregon State Parks and outdoor recreation as well as our heritage conservation programs to Oregon's economy. I take that seriously and feel very strongly the longer I'm in this business that we are part of the foundation of Oregon's economy. And these are issues that are not only of vital importance to us, they're of vital importance to you and to the governor these days. And it's important to us because we believe that we do. The parks that we operate, the heritage programs that we provide, the customers we serve, the things they do are a critical part of the foundation of the emerging Oregon economy. Not all. It's not all, or maybe the major part of Oregon's emerging economy, but tourism and outdoor recreation and the quality of life that Oregon has to offer cannot be overlooked. So I have much more about that I wanted to say, but I'm gonna skip that because I'd really like to get into the operations presentation. But we have a presentation book that we've provided to you, which is a smaller three-ring binder. This is Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. 2003-2005 listings. And you'll find in that book there are yellow tabs separating the sections. And you can see it'll begin with the agency summary, which I will provide. and it goes on to fuel operations. In the back, there's a section marked appendix, and in there you'll find things like our performance measures, budget notes and how we responded to them, the last ballot measure 66 audit, affirmative action report, and those kinds of results. So, having said all that, I would like to, if it's acceptable to the chair, through the week, ask three of my senior staff to participate with me in presenting this budget. I would like to do the agency overview, be available to answer any questions, and provide a summary and conclusion at the end of our presentation. But I've got three senior staff who serve as assistant directors who I have asked to prepare to present their sections. And Tim Wood, who's assistant director for operations, will be presenting field operations and resource management planning. James Hamrick will be providing the information about heritage conservation. And Janet Tindall, our assistant director for administration, will be providing the presentation on administration. So with that, I'd like to begin with the agency overview and just point out that on page one, best place to begin, we have provided the statutory and constitutional authorities that support the department. You can see the what is commonly referred to as the ballot measure 66 language is referenced there, as well as ORS 390, 358, 97, and our administrative rules, which are all promulgated under Chapter 736. I have a copy of ballot measure 66 that answers the question about the use of these funds. And it simply says that they are deposited in the Park Natural Resource Fund by the created by the Legislative Assembly, and all monies in the Parks and Natural Resource Fund, 50% shall be distributed for the public purposes of financing the protection, repair, operation, and creation of state parks, ocean shore, and public beach access areas, historic sites, and recreation areas. And that's repeated a number of times, but it's generally in that same vein.
Excuse me, Mike, does that limit you then to state-owned properties, or can you also participate in local or private sites as well?
It makes reference to here we go. there is a section where it talks about how the funds are used. It's again, in the same vein, maintenance, construction, operation, improvement of parks, of state parks and recreation facilities, acquisition of real property, capital improvements, and then third, operate grant programs for local government entities deemed necessary to accomplish the public purposes of the Parks and Natural Resources Fund established under this section.
Okay. Any questions?
Well, if we move on to page two, you can see that we printed in very bold, large letters our mission, and one of these days I'll get it committed to memory, but it is to provide and protect outstanding natural, scenic, cultural, historic, and recreation sites for the enjoyment and education of present and future generations. And the thing that I stress is that this is a unique opportunity for our department, despite the current situation with the economy and the status of state finances. We are in a unique situation of having adequate funds where we can consider the importance of making strategic investments for the future needs of Oregon's outdoor recreation needs and its public. And I know that that's hard for you to focus on at times when you're dealing with agencies that are looking at 30% budget reductions, but it is the reality of our situation right now that we do have this opportunity and we do see a demand. We've recently completed a 5-year comprehensive outdoor recreation plan, which is a very detailed, data-driven supply-demand analysis for outdoor recreation for Oregon that looks forward and identifies based upon population growth and other needs as well as current recreation supply and demand what kind of strategic investments are needed for outdoor recreation and for state parks in particular in future years. Page three, we've identified the performance measures that are linked to the Oregon benchmarks.
I got the on the top bullet point, benchmark number 90. Is that total acres or is that developed acres?
No, it's just total acres. That would be an expression of the amount of open space available for public recreation, both developed and undeveloped.
And I assume that at some point in this presentation, we'll have a discussion about properties that you want to develop or move.
Mr. Chair, yes, that is a part of the presentation that we're making.
Representative Krager.
State Parks has 93,000 acres.
Mr. Chair, yes, it's about 95,000 acres now.
Okay, and somewhere in the neighborhood, 11,000 to 12,000 of it's in Curry County.
Mr. Chair, I'll take it on faith that Representative Krieger knows that number better than I do.
Where I'm going is...
I think he's setting you up here. I don't know.
I can see where this is going. Where I'm going is we love our state parks. Let's be very careful about how much we create in one area. And if there's a need to kind of distribute the need around the state of Oregon.
Mr. Chair, this is exactly the thing that the State Conference of Outdoor Recreation Plan is helping us identify, is where there's a shortfall of open space and public recreation opportunities compared to the demand. And traditionally, conservation agencies over the years have bought land where it was available, where it was cheap, where local government wanted it purchased because that was the thing to do at the time. But now we're into really driving our priorities by where the demand exists. And, you know, clearly, if you look up and down the Willamette Valley and the population growth that is going to occur here in the next few years, we probably have a dearth of quality open space for recreation right here in the valley. But if you look on either side, there's an abundance relative to the population. These performance measures are provided in greater detail in Appendix A. Look at those. Page 4, I mentioned to you Target 2014 and the importance of that, guiding the Commission and the Department in accomplishing our major goals between now and 2014 and really fulfilling a legacy that we think was intended to be created when the voters adopted 2014 Ballot Measure 66. We have 8 major goals that include promoting outdoor recreation, being an example or the best model of natural resource conservation in the management of our parks, as well as our agency business practices, focusing on preserving Oregon's rich cultural heritage and broadening people's understanding of historic places and events, acquiring properties which goes to that last question, that build on the diversity and strength of our current system. We do believe that there are properties, and certainly some of the acquisitions we've made on the coast, like the Sisters Rock property and others that we're looking at, our properties of Sam Boardman, if he lived long enough or worked long enough, would have eventually acquired. We do feel that there are a few of those, so our acquisition priority is driven both by recreation demand as well as identifying those things that truly belong in a state park system. You can see we have a goal for delivering world-class interpretive experiences. I love the word interpretation, but a lot of people don't grasp that it isn't translating language. It's also interpreting the natural world or the environment or enhancing the experience that people have in an outdoor recreation in particular. It's used to mean what we traditionally have called the park naturalist experience. We want to continue to promote access to our beaches, trails, and waterways. We want to provide high-quality camping, which has been the foundation of the outdoor recreation and state park experience over several generations and will continue to be, especially if you look at the trends that we've seen in Oregon in our state park system with camping and overnight visits. It continues to climb. It climbed 7% between 2001 and 2002, and that's a typical trend. And finally, we want to seek sufficient and stable operational long-term funding. So again, I go back to the concern that Susie Jordan expressed. I go back to the goal that we've established of not returning to dependence on general fund, but instead to remain independent of general fund over the long term. That's what guides the department as far as broad goals. As I said earlier, those are supported by specific objectives, by several other plans, and by performance measures. Page 6, we've identified our commissioners. As I mentioned, they're appointed by the governor for 4-year terms and confirmed by the Senate. There are seven of them. 5 represent the congressional districts, the federal congressional districts, and there are 2 at large, 1 who represents the area east of the Cascades and 1 who represents the area west of the Coast Range. And we've outlined the responsibilities, as I said, the most important of which to me is my appointment. There, I finally got a laugh on that one.
Let's discuss that.
Yeah, you're just checking to see if we're awake or not.
We've provided you with a 2001. This may be a little confusing because of the header on the document, but on page 7, actually what's there is a 2001-2003 organization chart. This is the organization table we've been operating under in the current biennium. And you may recall, because I talked to a number of you personally about this when I did it, we used to have a deputy director position and ran the agency really with a chief operating officer through a deputy director, and I eliminated that position and assigned three people to assistant director status and have divided them between administration, operations, and heritage conservation. You can see that we have a number of boards and commissions and committees that advise us and serve us in addition to the Parks and Recreation Commission. That's just repeated again on page 8, where we identify those citizen groups that we think provide us very valuable input and oversight. A number of our programs, they tend to be very specific in nature, centered around things like trails or historic preservation or the Pioneer Cemetery Commission, but they're quite valuable to us nonetheless. Some are appointed by me, some by the commission, and some by the governor. Page 9, we have a department organization that's really essentially the same as the 0103. It's just in a different format, but it's the one we expect to use for the coming biennium. And as you can see, we're expecting no major changes in the organization of the department. We do have some minor shifting of responsibility units from one division to another that may even require a small technical adjustment to our budget, and we'll work with you and with LFO on that in the process. But overall, we intend to work with the organizational structure that we've established here, which seems to work very well for us.
Mike, on page 8, the dotted line between you and the governor, does that mean that the commission hires you, appoints you?
Yes, the commission appoints me, and that line refers to the fact that while I report to the commission, I'm also expected to serve as a cabinet member for the governor.
So the commission consults with the governor, then I take it.
Well, I don't know what the long-term practice has been, but I know in my case that there was a visit in the governor's office before I interviewed with the commission, and he had an opportunity to talk to all the candidates and to get to know them before they were interviewed. Well, page 10 talks about our major programs and responsibilities. You can see we're responsible for the acquisition, development, and management of state parks and the ocean beaches, the state scenic waterways. There are 19 of those, encompassing 1,150 miles, and we have some regulatory or quasi-regulatory responsibility for those as well as for designating them. And the Willamette Greenway, that unique act of the early 1970s that established a greenway concept from Portland to Eugene along the Willamette River. We're also responsible for the historic preservation and other heritage programs, and for local assistance, which we feel is a very important service that we provide. I just computed the other day that we award over $20 million in financial assistance to local units of government each biennium.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
The Willamette River Greenway, can you talk to us about how that's funded and how it works?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, it began as largely an acquisition program in the early 70s. And by acquisition, I mean the concept was to not only acquire in fee simple lands for open space and public recreation, but to acquire scenic easements or conservation easements and leave land essentially in private ownership and even in agricultural practices. And at the time that it got started, we were under the Department of Transportation, and the Transportation Land Acquisition Agents were responsible for acquiring parkland. And they went out and fairly aggressively, under former Chair Glenn Jackson, acquired either easements or lands in fee simple.
Is the funding part of your operations budget?
Well, yes, it is. Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, the only activity that we engage in, we have a plan that provides for management of the area. The activity that we engage in now is management of the sites that we own, which we do through our normal parks operating budget. And many of those sites are, well, there are five sites that were developed as state park sites, and the rest are kind of outlying parcels that are managed for public access to the river usually. And those are just managed by the nearest park as part of their operating budget. So from time to time, our acquisition funds are used to acquire additional parcels on the Willamette Greenway.
May I have a follow-up? Oh. And so a decision about using this acquisition mechanism, if you will, is what at the discretion of the commission, or how, what would cause you to put money in this and use it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, thank you for that question. It's an excellent question. It is at the discretion of the commission, as would be the expansion of any other state park, or buying land along the coast to provide better access to the ocean beaches. And what would cause us to use this is if a willing owner of a parcel adjoining land that we own approaches us expressing a desire to sell their land, and it fits our criteria as a high priority, their criteria that we've adopted in your direction, we would consider acquiring that. We might also acquire a parcel if it connects two parcels that we own, again, if there was a willing seller who had approached us.
What's the criteria in terms of geographic proximity to the river to be included in the program?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, in a plan that the department adopted a number of years ago, it actually established acquisition boundaries for the program, and the intent of the Willamette Greenway legislation was the river corridor, the riparian lands right along the river corridor. But for the purpose of providing access from highways and roads to those parcels, or providing a viable area for recreation, say if a campground was going to be established, we might have acquired more land. And I can think of Willamette Mission as an example, if you've ever been there, where quite a bit of acreage was acquired, and it includes some land back quite a ways back away from the highway. But typically, it's the intent is to capture that floodplain corridor along the river.
One more flip.
Sure.
So if you chose to, you could move Measure 66 money into this program?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, we have, in fact, used Measure 66 money for the acquisition side of this program, and are using some Measure 66 money to support park operations, which supports the maintenance of these lands.
Thank you.
Other questions? Go ahead.
Page 11, we talk in more detail about those programs and identified subsets of those. As I said, the State Scenic Waterway Program is 19 scenic waterways and one lake. The Willamette Greenway, by the way, is 90 parcels now. I said five major parks. I misspoke. One was never developed. It's four major parks and 4,000 acres of land. We have quite a bit of planning activity that goes on in the department. We are responsible for working with the Department of Transportation in the award of recreational trails funds that are appropriated annually by Congress. And we prepare the State Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan and are also currently working on a State Comprehensive Trails Plan that will include motorized, non-motorized, and water-based trails. Heritage conservation side of the department, you can see the number of responsibilities we have, which include the State Historic Preservation Office, which is both a state designation and a federal designation. Under the Federal Historic Preservation Act, every state is required to establish a State Historic Preservation Office, and it performs review and compliance functions on behalf of the National Park Service. And so the governor is expected to appoint a State Historic Preservation Officer and to maintain an office. Under the Federal Act, federal agencies or actions that have a federal nexus are subject to that act and are required to review the effect of their activities with our office for adverse effects on historic properties. And so that's a major function we do. One of the things that would probably surprise you to learn is that one of the biggest volume of activities we've had under the SHPO office, we call it SHPO, I'm sorry, State Historic Preservation Office, has been reviewing cell tower license applications and cell tower siting in Oregon, because they are licensed by the FCC, and the FCC is required to ensure that all the licensees and their activities do not have adverse effects on historic properties. And so the cell tower companies are required to submit their application to us for review and for us to make a determination as to the potential effect of those towers. And it generates a significant workload. And it seems to cycle where, you know, in one generation it's cell towers because that's the emerging industry. At some other period of time it would be some other activity that's under some federal nexus, like a federal license or permit. We receive federal funds to support this activity and to perform this function. And all 50 states and the territories provide that office and serve that function. You can see under agency-wide administration, we support financial services, our personnel and safety program, information services, or what we would call information and education, and information services means, I misspoke there, information services means information technology, whereas public services means information education. Page 12 identifies major changes that have occurred since 93 or in the last 10 years of the department. Page 13, this is something that I'm pleased to see in the instructions for preparing our budget, is how we compare both in terms of park visitation, size of our system, how we operate, and the economic impacts. And you can see that Oregon is sixth nationally in day use attendance in its parks. It's ninth nationally in overnight attendance. It's third nationally in the visits per number of employees, and we're proud of that. It's not a pitch for more employees. It's a statement of pride that we think we give the public the biggest bang for their buck, or the third biggest bang for their buck in the country in terms of state park attendance. How we compare, we've shown how we compare to 11 western states around us, and I think we compare very favorably as a park system. And you can see that we rank very high in terms of Oregon's commitment to providing for state parks and outdoor recreation. And then finally, you can see on page 13, the economic impact, and this is the thing in my expanded remarks that I'd want to talk about more. We think that the economic impact in many locales of a state park and a campground can be, and in fact is, quite significant.
Mike, what do you, how do you come up with that number? What do you include in that number?
We work with the Oregon Tourism Commission and pull data out of their regular research that they do to determine, and they, you know, they're divided, or they're in their partnership with the travel and tourism industry, they divide their research into their major travel regions. And so we pull their data and line it up with the, in fact, these are the nine travel regions. They're not our park districts. They're, in fact, the nine travel regions. So it's probably just pulled directly from those numbers.
So I guess what I'm kind of searching for, because sometimes I think it's, these kind of numbers are very misleading, but you consider the tax revenue that would come off the property if it's owned and managed by the state, or and if it's timber type land, you consider that there's no income off the timber to the local community and those kind of things?
Mr. Chair, I doubt that those considerations are made. These are just the direct expenditures and economic, the new economic impact. I doubt that it doesn't offset in terms of negatives.
Like, not a net figure then?
Mr. Chair, no, I doubt that it is.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Duke.
On the comparison to the 11 western states, and you may not know it off the top of your head, I have difficulty comparing us to California on anything, and it's certainly not to attendance, because they've got so many people in that state. I was just curious as to which, but the other states, I mean, at least the first two were third. I was curious as to who the second state was in those two. So if you don't have it now, you can get it later. That's fine.
Mr. Chair, I would venture a guess that we're talking about California and Washington. California first, Washington second, because of population and from the numbers that I recall. But I will double check that.
I would have thought perhaps Colorado. So.
Okay. That'd be kind of fun to know that.
Never match California in anything.
Page 14. This is the one that we actually have a short copy of, an alternate copy in our back pocket in case this isn't satisfactory to you. But this is the new form that gave us all a lot of consternation about just what the best way was to present this. So we've divided, for the terms of assigning priorities to our services, the department into five major program areas that we've listed there. And we, as I said, we can break that down further and provide you more detailed priority lists if you'd like to see that. Page 15, these are some of the issues that referenced in Susie and Lisa's presentations. And there are facility issues, the need for facility maintenance. Major issues in facility investment, we've talked about those. I'd like to move on because I really want to get Tim started today if we can get into field operations pretty soon. And on page 16, major budget issues. As you've heard, the financial management system, phase two of that, was really locked in and committed to doing that. And it was at the direction of the 99 legislature that we needed to convert our financial management system to the state system. I'm very pleased with how the staff and our management team have done on bringing the cost of that down and bringing the project to a scope that's not only achievable but cost-effective and is meeting our time frame. The development of a state park in Washington County, the top major priority of the department for new park development, is in here, and it's an issue for us in this budget. We have some personnel and staffing issues that were outlined in the presentation by both LFO and BAM. And we'll be talking about these again as we present the three major parts of the department's organization. Page 18 has a summary of position reclassifications, and we actually provide a more detailed breakdown on those reclassifications if you so desire.
I think at some point in this week we would like to see that broken down.
Okay.
And again, at least speaking for myself, my interest there is that as we move on through the 15 years of Bell Adventure 66, we want to be very careful that we're not building in some costs that we lose control of later on.
Understood, Mr. Chair. Page 19, we talk about the governor's balanced budget, and this we hope that this budget is still balanced. The 2003-2005 estimated revenues would total $161 million in this budget. You see a beginning balance that I don't want to startle you with that nearly 16% beginning balance, because you need to understand that that is broken down in the following ways. Of that, not quite a third are funds that are held in that all-terrain vehicle account from permit sales for ATVs, and it's just a matter of we inherited a big balance from the Department of Transportation with that fund 4 years ago. We're spending it down, but it's really dependent on the projects that are available out there to fund. It is a dedicated source of revenue, and its expenditures are dedicated for ATV projects. We have some debt reserve that we're required to hold of almost 1% of the total budget. Grant obligations, and that's another part of this, is this beginning balance reflects money that we've actually obligated in grants to communities, but they haven't claimed the reimbursement yet because they haven't completed the project or the paperwork. And then the rest is either other obligations that are still standing at the end of the year that we will pay out. And the total unobligated amount is really only about a third, 15% is actual unobligated funds.
Mike, you have some of your staff working on the impact of the gas fuel cost, what that will do to your expected revenues this coming season?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe we started a fiscal impact on a motor fuel tax increase. We have done a fiscal impact if the vehicle registrations were increased because of the fact that we received the RV fees. But we will begin working.
Someone have it?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I missed your question. Thank you, Lisa. Mr. Chair, I thought you were talking about the discussion about increasing the motor fuel tax.
No.
And your cost was about the cost at the pump. And no, we haven't. And I was sweating a little bit earlier when we were talking about the pop for utility increase, because the increased cost to us for fuel may dwarf the concerns we've had about utility costs increase over the next several months, and we do need to start working on that.
Well, my guess is it could go either way. You're going to probably have less out-of-state guests, but you probably have more of our Willamette Valley and Metro people go into our state parks.
Well, Mr. Chair, that certainly seems to have been the trend in 2002. We had a record camping year in a period where the economy really turned down, and a lot of other tourism and vacation venues were complaining that their numbers were down, and in fact our park numbers were at a record high and our camping was at a record high, and we think that was a result of people staying closer to home, taking cheaper vacations like camping.
But this year it wouldn't surprise me if we see double fuel costs from what we saw last year too. So we're getting close.
If we could turn to page 20, we've identified there in the boxes on left and right the measures that we've taken to control costs and create efficiencies. We're proud of our volunteer service program. We have over 33,000 volunteers who donate almost a 500,000 hours of service to our state parks. That's just a tremendous effort, and you can see that really supplants the need for almost 226 full-time staff. And it's amazing the spirit of community service and volunteers and the Oregonians and even people from outside the state exhibit toward our state parks and providing these kinds of activities. And they do everything under the sun for us. We work closely using inmate labor with county government and with the State Department of Corrections. We're putting greater emphasis on sustainability and looking for ways to save money through sustainable means. We've made some we propose to make some IT investments that we think would save us money. The geographic information system package that you'll be hearing about over the next couple of days is actually aimed at saving us money in the long run because we presently buy that product from private providers. We want to increase the number of reservations in our parks made over the Internet, which is the cheapest way to make them, and in fact that number is trending up. And we've identified other measures that we do. We have a large contingent of friend groups that support our parks, and some of them have annual budgets in the $200,000 to $300,000 range and full-time staff that they've employed just to support an individual park. And they really provide the icing on the cake for us.
Mike, the GIS systems, I'm sure we're going to be hearing from a lot of other departments of the programs they have with GIS. Is there any coordination in the state to try to contain those costs of those programs?
Mr. Chair, yes, there is. There's. I'm very pleased that 2 years ago, or 3 years ago now, DAS kind of resurrected its Geographic Information Clearinghouse function and brought on, probably, in my opinion, one of the best GIS state coordinators I've ever met. And they reforged a Geographic Information Council on which I serve. Other agency directors serve on that. We support the DAS effort through a annual payment to DAS for that service. And the whole purpose is to coordinate agency efforts, not only within Oregon government, but across Oregon government. So we have representatives from local government sitting on this council and participating as well. And there's close coordination and operation and planning, as well as building capacity of these systems.
Is that also tied into the Natural Resource Institute? I mean, to where we can get continue combining that information?
Mr. Chair, they are a participant in the in what we call the Oregon Geographic Information Council, and in fact have made some presentations, and there, some of their data layers have been used by the other agencies and other units of government. We talk on page 21 about the coordination we do with other agencies. I've mentioned this before. We have close relationships with Department of Corrections, with the Department of Transportation, with the Marine Board, of course with DAS. We have, I think, a building and good relationship with tribal government. We're closely with the Tourism Division and a number of other agencies that we have listed on here. Page 22, we provide you with a summary of the 0103. Again, this is a little misleading because of the repeating header up there, but we've actually shown you the 0103 estimated expenditures, $130 million. And on the following page, is our estimated expenditures in the 03-05 under the budget that we're presenting to you this week. We're required as part of our budget instructions on page 24, you'll see to just talk about some of the major issues associated with information technology, how we're making use of it, some of the major changes we've made, some of the major issues that stand out there for us. Of course, the financial management system is a big one for us, and it's a top priority, but we've also had quite a history now for about 8 years with the Reservations Northwest program that we've established for camping reservation, and I'm pleased to say that it just gets better all the time, and the complaints are down to an all-time low, and the service is up to an all-time high. I think that's a continuing trend.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank
you. Senator Johnson.
Before you turn away from the information technology piece, I can't let this opportunity pass without thanking you and your department for the work that you've done to help make visitors aware of the Lewis and Clark activities in the state with a very accessible, easy-to-use website with lots of important links to other activities. And you guys undertook that, and it's really been a profound assistance to the state in getting the word out.
Chair, Representative Johnson, thank you. And on page 25, you'll see we've got a description of the three of the six legislative concepts that we asked to be introduced on our behalf that are related to budget. The first, House Bill 2257, would continue an authority that we've been exercised, but apparently without statutory foundation, of waiving fees for certain units of government for certain kinds of ocean shores permits. And upon learning from legislative counsel that they didn't think we had sufficient statutory authority to do that, we asked for it. And in fact, that is the first bill that we've had passed both houses on its way to the governor. We have a bill related to criminal background checks. Because we use almost 34,000 volunteers and because we routinely hire a large number of employees every year, some of whom are seasonal and in and out of our agency, it's important to us that when we put these people in positions where they're working closely with the public and with children and other vulnerable visitors in our parks, that we know everything we can about them. For that reason, we want authority to request criminal offender information. We can get that information in Oregon about any record in Oregon they may have, but we have a problem going out of state and requesting that because we're not authorized by our legislature to make that request, and they only honor that request from agencies that have such authority. And finally, we have a House Bill 228, which, like 2257, is one that I'm seeking to simply clarify that we do have authority to grant waivers, fees, or reductions, or discounts for our various park fees that we offer, camping or day use fees.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With reference to House Bill 2208, does part of that require you still to come back to have that ratified by the legislative process?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, 2208 would amend ORS 390, which is the park statute. There's a separate statute, I believe it's 295, and I'll double check that reference, which provides that requirement, and that is still on the books. And that requirement is that in even numbered years, the department or its commission by rule can increase fees on approval of the director of DAS, but in odd numbered years must bring those to the legislature as through the Ways and Means process.
And so the ones, if I might, Mr. Chair, the ones that you increase on the even number of years, you would have to come to the legislature to have your expenditure authority adjusted, and you would have to continue to get authorization to enact or to collect the money, to spend the money, essentially.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, yes, that's my understanding.
Thank you.
And finally, on page 26, we have our affirmative action report. Actually, the report, this is our target of what we hope to accomplish in 03-05. I think our report is included in the appendix of what we have achieved. So that takes us, if there are no further questions about the EC overview, I really would like to get into the field operations part. And I think we've got about 15 minutes if you intend to go till 3.
Mike, let me ask you one more quick question. Will there be an opportunity for us to discuss access to your facilities and with the Endangered Species Act? How that complicating that for you?
Mr. Chair, it's not part of our budget presentation, but I'd certainly be happy to answer any questions that you have about whether there's been an impact. I could do that very quickly and tell you that the only impact that we've observed so far has been on the annual request for the last 7 years, I believe, from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, coordinated with the Bureau of Land Management and the U.S. Forest Service, to restrict certain uses on the dry sands of the ocean beaches. About just under 18 miles of ocean beaches have had dry sand restrictions during the nesting season, which is typically March 15th through September 15th. There's one half-mile stretch that's been closed to all uses on both wet and dry sand, and that's been eliminated through a special agreement this year between BLM and Curry County, in which they traded some land, and Curry County agreed to restrict certain uses on a part. So I would say that the total effect so far has been, for the last several years, dry sand restrictions during nesting season on about 18 miles of ocean beaches. We're preparing a habitat conservation plan on western snowy plover expressly for the purpose of creating some certainty for the future as to how we can avoid massive beach closures and through getting an incidental take permit, ensure that we can keep certain sections of the ocean beaches open.
So I was going to ask you a follow-up question, if there's a possibility that you could lose more access, and I guess your answer is that you are concerned about that and you're trying to get the authority to manage that properly then.
Mr. Chair, yes, exactly. We are concerned about that because there is a draft recovery plan that was published by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that identifies major segments of the Oregon coast from the entire north to south reach that are identified as potential or desirable snowy plover habitat. And if the same approach were taken on managing those that have been taken where nesting has been occurring in recent years, that would not portend well for Oregon's recreating public on the ocean beaches. And so the practical and reasonable and traditional thing to do is for a department to prepare a habitat conservation plan in which there's somewhat of a negotiation between the department and the service over ensuring that certain segments would not be subject to the Endangered Species Act or to closure.
Are you aware of any other species that could be a concern down the road?
Mr. Chair, I can't think of any other species at this time that we would expect to interrupt park use or public access to the ocean beaches.
Thank you. We're ready for the field operation.
I'd like to introduce Tim Wood, Assistant Director for Operations. Tim's going to take you through the field operations part of the budget. And he'll also be handling the resource management and planning.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. As Mike said, I'm Tim Wood, the Assistant Director for Operations for the Department. Operations Division is responsible for the acquisition and management of all OPRD properties. This includes operation and maintenance of the campgrounds, day-use facilities, historic natural sites, and interpreting these sites for our visitors. As Mike mentioned, I'll have three areas which I will present. The first one today will be field operations. I'll also present the resource management and planning section and the facilities investment section, and they're all located in the tabs in the book. The field operations portion has four program option packages, which I'll address later in the presentation.
If you could, just to help us out as you go through, tell us what page number you're on.
I'm on 27, sir, at the field operations tab, and now page 28. 28 identifies our various customers. They range from the 38 million visitors we have annually to private partnerships and partnerships with other public landowners and other federal, state, and local jurisdictions as we deliver outdoor recreation services to the public. The Operation Division provides the on-the-ground services to park users. It's our rangers and our field managers who are the department's direct contact, generally with the public, and our visitors. And they're the folks who provide the traditional services of campground maintenance and operation, and interpretive and educational programming, and they manage our volunteers and maintain the facilities and grounds that we maintain. On page 29, you will see that we've established a series of performance measures to guide us in the achievement of the goals, as Mike mentioned, that are established to support the goals of Target 2014. So the two goals that pertain to field operations are listed there and relate to delivering world-class interpretive services as well as adding some additional trail miles to our park system.
Mr. Chairman, clarification. So for the performance measure that relates to the agency goal, I guess what I'm after here is what percentage of the master plans have interpretive aspects to them? Is it by all? Is it most or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, we in the year 2000 we completed what we called an interpretive master plan, and that looked at all of the interpretive, what we believe to be the most significant resources that we have to interpret in our parks, and we. Back up. We looked at all the resources that we had to interpret in our parks and prioritized them. And they were prioritized somewhat upon the significance of the resource. For instance, Shampooi, even if nobody ever visited Shampooi State Park, would be a very significant resource because of its relationship to the history of the state. But when we combined a look at the potential visitation and the significance of the resources, then we prioritized those parks. And those that prioritized higher on the list were identified as those which should provide a higher level of service for interpretive services. And so we have gone through our whole park system and identified what level of service is appropriate for those properties. They range from a priority level of 5, which would require a full-time staff member who's responsible for interpretation, program development, working with volunteers, educational outreach, and so forth, to a low of 1, which might be nothing in terms of a piece of property, might be simply a beach access property or a wayside where no interpretive message is really appropriate to be delivered there, or something that could be delivered but delivered in a very passive manner like a sign or a marker or something like that.
So may I have another point of clarification here? With the master plan then, is there a timeline for implementing these projects?
We would like to implement, Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, yes, our plan would be to achieve the first three levels, levels 3, 4, and 5, by the year 2014.
So is the measurement here then where you are according to that master plan, the schedule that you have in the master plan, is that what you're measuring?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, what we're measuring are the number of parks where that goal of that level of service has been achieved.
Okay, so this doesn't relate to any kind of schedule and keeping with a schedule. This just relates to what the whole field is and how far you're into it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Moore, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Page 30, then, lists several of the significant factors affecting the delivery of services. As Mike has mentioned, park use is increasing. Camping is on its way up significantly at its high since 10 years ago in 1992. But what is most significant about it is that camping and park use is increasing in the fall, winter, and spring, in times of the year which have not necessarily been traditional high use times for Oregon State Parks. During January of this year, camping increased 33% on just the North Coast. Above January of 2002. So the public is becoming accustomed to camping in state parks during the off-season, and they're also expecting that services be delivered in the off-season much in the same way they are, to the same level that they are during the summer season as well. Also, with an increased use and a growing trend toward interest in nature and historic-related interests, activities such as interpretation and education are becoming more and more demand, and that's been proven out by the recent statewide comprehensive outdoor recreation study that Mike mentioned earlier. So our real challenge is balancing the recreational demands of the public with the resources' ability to support them, and with our resources to be able to deliver those services.
Mike, let me ask you, are you able to increase your revenues enough in the winter months to justify the additional staff?
Mr. Chair, we have made some adjustments in our rate structure to encourage this participation in the winter. Some of the other things that we do in the winter are we reduce the number of facilities that are available by reducing the number of camp loops, and we take some facilities out of service, such as restrooms and other facilities where we would incur an expense of operating those. But that is our objective, is to reduce the cost as well.
Okay.
On page 31, these are some of the agencies and intergovernmental relationships, partnerships that we have. Our cooperation with these various agencies takes on a wide range. It's in the form of grants for specific projects, collaboration and management of properties, and sharing of ideas on management techniques and problem solving. In some cases, we also operate properties through management agreement or lease that are owned by the Corps of Engineers, the Forest Service, the Bureau of Reclamation, Bureau of Land Management, and the Oregon Division of State Lands. I'd also like to mention that one of our partners is the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, who provides youth groups who do work in our parks as well during the summertime, through both programs that they have and through contracting with the Northwest Youth Corps. Our primary source of funding is user fees through campsite and facility rentals and day use fees. Other fees, of course, include RV registration fees, lottery-supported parks, and natural resources fund. On page 32, our request for the 0305 biennium is $59.7 million, which is a $6.2 million increase over the current biennium. Major changes to the 0103 budget relate to the four program option packages and the allowed inflation, and those are listed on page 33. The packages that are included in this budget then begin on page 34. Lisa covered those four option packages in her presentation. There are adjustments for inflation and so forth. On page packages that are listed on page 34. On page 35 is Program Option Package 102, and it's proposed to increase the department's limitation by $750,000 to establish on a continuing basis for the management of the department's equipment pool. As Lisa mentioned earlier, these are the kinds of items which are landscaping and parks maintenance kinds of equipment, items which are not available for lease through the Department of Administrative Services. We would like to accomplish this through a combination of leases and purchases through commercial vendors and put this kind of equipment on a planned replacement cycle so it's better managed. Right now, our equipment pool that's comprised of dump trucks, tractors, mowers, and power equipment has aged such that 60% of the inventory is 10 years or more older. By approving this package, it will allow us to reduce operating costs over the long term by avoiding costly repairs. It will allow us to capture the value of equipment through resale and trade-in before it becomes too old to lose its value. And it will also provide safer equipment for the operation of our staff as well as
potential
visitors.
Do you ever share equipment? For example, I know that one of your parks has an airport in it. And do you make any effort, or are both sets of staff going down to deal with maintenance issues?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, we share equipment. We have some items that are shared between our own management units. Each park doesn't have a full set of equipment. But we also do some probably informal sharing of equipment between us and ODOT or us and other agencies and local communities and counties when it's appropriate, when they're available to do the work.
Are there any impediments to doing that the legislature needs to address?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I really don't believe so. I think that we find that, you know, at the where the work gets done, at the local areas, our folks are pretty creative in working with each other to share equipment and save resources between agencies and jurisdictions.
Thank you.
The last item on package 102 there I would like to say is that we will offset some of the costs of this package by the sale of outdated equipment through DAS surplus sales. Package 109 on page 36 is a request to establish 9 positions in the department to meet the growing demand for natural and historic interpretation and management of those resources in our park. Park naturalists deliver campfire programs, nature walks, and information on the natural and cultural resources that are unique to Oregon State Parks. These programs are key to developing understanding, knowledge, and appreciation of the natural, cultural, and historic resources of our state parks.
Just a minute. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt. I was just going to ask a question about this. And maybe you better get done with the presentation before I ask your question. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. See, I'm getting sensitive because I ignore you sometimes.
You ignore me because I ask too many questions.
Well, I'm looking at my notes, and then I see you're over there.
The development of a core of professional, trained, and experienced staff experienced in program development, delivery, and outreach is critical to the attainment of the Commission's goal of providing world-class interpretive experience for our visitors. This package would provide 3 regional naturalist positions and 6 positions at various parks in the system. So to relate that to our performance measure earlier, that would establish some of the professional staff that we have determined to be necessary to achieve that level 5 level of service. Positions would be phased in beginning in January of 2004, and it's one real key step in meeting the target 2014 goal of providing world-class interpretive experience to our visitors. What we really need here, and this package would help us accomplish, is the development of professional staff, delivering of consistent programs, and to develop visitors' appreciation for Oregon's natural and cultural heritage.
Representative Johnson.
Now my question. Given that we have just been through a kind of grueling period of time trying to rebalance the 0103 and we're looking ahead to some very significant challenges in 0305, how detrimental would the lack of those naturalists and interpreters be at this juncture if that program were suspended or... How far back would it set you were that not to occur?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, we believe that developing most of our staff that has currently been recruited has not been recruited for the skills of developing and presenting interpretive services. Now, having said that, we've got some great staff who do have these skills, but that isn't why they were recruited. We would make the most use of the skills that we currently have. It would slow us down in the achievement of our goal, but we would work hard to find ways to continue to deliver the services that we believe we need to do.
Well, Mr. Chair, the point that I guess I'm trying to make is, while there's no general fund in this budget, I think having just completed 9 town halls in my own district, that there's the perception that government is continuing to grow and expand. Services are available that heretofore have not been available. I don't think folks necessarily understand that money stays in silos. And from the symbolic point of view of the addition of naturalists to sort of augment an outdoor experience, how essential that is to your meeting commission-established goals at this particular point in time, realizing that the public is watching and acutely sensitive to what they perceive deviation from core mission.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, that's a very fair question. I think that if this package were, I think it's the developing a core staff of professional park naturalist interpreters is very essential to a world-class park system. Now, having said that, if this package were not to be approved or were to be approved at a lesser degree than what we've asked for here, it would not diminish us in the future from continuing to achieve that goal, I think. So it may mean it would be a little longer before we got there.
Okay.
have about 1 minute, and Lieutenant Kruger, did you have a quick question?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Last year, my figure was didn't the department ask for 14 new employee positions last year? I don't recall what we gave on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kruger, I think the number of field operations was approximately 14 positions. That was for field operations. There were actually several more FTE in that budget, but some were in administration, some were for the special financial management system project that we're doing. But 14 is the number I remember for field operations.
Okay. Would you like to finish up real quick?
Okay, Mr. Chair, continuing page 116, package 116 on page 37 refers to the increase, provides some additional limitation for funding increases in utility rates. That would add some additional funding, which would provide some relief to our everyday S&S operations budget in the field. The cost of electricity, as most people know, has increased about 54% over the last biennium. And at one park alone in our system, we're going to see an increase in sewage rates of 87% over the next 3 years. So we think that this is critical to keep us from eating into our operations budget. And then package 112 on page 38 is a request to convert temporary staff to seasonal positions to meet those guidelines that Susie and Lisa were talking about earlier, as provided by the Department of Administrative Services. This would take people which are currently being hired as temporary positions and establish about 8.1 FTE, I think it's about 21 positions, who would do seasonal work such as campground maintenance, help us meet, increase the workload during the peak season. Conversion of these positions to seasonal positions would also help us reduce the need for annual recruiting. It should help provide some stability because we'd get the same people back generally the following year, and also help us reduce the training need. So that's what package 112 is.
Okay. With that, I'm going to have to close the public hearing. And Mike, if you could help me out tomorrow, I've got a problem here that I'm getting notes from my committee saying that it's at 1 o'clock, it's too hard to stay awake in these meetings. So they told me to tell some jokes. I'm not good at telling jokes. So
have jokes for 15 minutes.
We need some life in this committee. Right now. I notice in the audience, eyes are starting to droop as well. So.
I will do my best.
Okay.
Be on the game.
With that, we'll close the meeting.
That's not my dramatic entrance.